right, friends, welcome to Stand to Reason. Greg Kokel, your host here, and appreciate you being on board with me. The number, just for the record, 855-243-9975. We got Ryan in Cincinnati holding on so patiently since last hour, and I'm glad he's going to stick with us because I do want to chat with him about his question. And just keep in mind, if you have questions, this is the place to go with them. I'm right here every Tuesday from 4 until 6 p.m. taking your calls. Amy is the one who handles that. She's our enforcer now, and then she'll pass you on to me. If you can't call in, you can always use STR Ask. That's hashtag STR Ask, and write your question out there in Twitter or tweet form and include the terms hashtag STR Ask, and then that will come to Amy, and then we can deal with it on the other podcast. We did actually 4 shows this morning, Amy and I, together, and it's always nice to be able to do that with her. So that's the other podcast that I participate in. So I wanted to read something from my local paper here. It's Thousand Oaks Acorn. I mean, it's like just really the local rag. And they have a section on faith, and so, I mean, maybe once a week they have an article, and this piece came out. Church youth leader talks about coming out, finding God. That's the headline here. The byline is, I'm trying to find it right now. It looks like Megley, M-E-G-L-I, Dawn Megley. Okay, she has written this piece, and it's a pleasant human interest piece about a young pastor who is gay and who is serving in a local church and trying to make a difference, all right, and which I applaud. This is not condescending, but as I read this, I want you to notice some things, all right? And a huge concern that I have, and this isn't news, obviously, but sometimes it's helpful to simplify issues. The concern that I have is the departure of Christians, and when enough of them are departing, it is the departure of Christianity from the foundational principles that makes Christianity Christianity. And these are not just theological principles that identify Christianity as a religious system, but they are details of the world that God made for the purpose of human flourishing. All right? The things that are foundational to the Christian view of reality, if you read the book, The Story of Reality, the 5 categories, God, man, Jesus, cross, resurrection, and here I mean the final resurrection to reward or judgment. These are categories of vital information that make up the story of reality, the accounting of the way the world actually and truly is. And when you live consistent with reality, then you have the best chance of flourishing as a human being, because reality, the world, was made by God for us. I don't know how else to put it. Now, it's not just God-man. There's another character in the story who's an adversary and who's a liar, and he's trying to upset the system. And he upsets the system by twisting the truth and telling lies, all right? And by undermining God's good purposes and making God's good purposes look evil, look bad, maybe is a better way of putting it. But in some mind, people's mind, it is evil. And then people are drawn away by a lie to something that is ugly, that is made to look attractive. And when they do, when they are drawn away, and this happens in a multitude of areas, then humans' evil increases. The evil in the world increases. Humans don't flourish the way God purposed, all right? I'll give you a perfect example. God hates divorce, all right? So what do we have in the modern era? We have no-fault divorce and divorce for just about any reason, and people are getting divorced left and right. And who suffers? Children suffer. Families suffer. So do the parents suffer. Because they bought a false view of reality. All right? God has a plan, and he wants that plan marriage to work a certain way, and that's why there's guidelines in God's plan for men and for women. That is, for husbands and for wives. And when husbands do what husbands are supposed to do and wives do what wives are supposed to do, then that union is strongest and healthiest, and there's the most flourishing. Okay, so there's just an example. Now, this particular piece is about homosexuality. And the whole distortion of God's purpose for sex in many, many ways, which includes heterosexual error as well, is one of the chief things that undermines human flourishing in our lives. I know this is counterintuitive for a lot of people. But nevertheless, God made humans to function a certain way, and when we function other than the ways he intended to make us, then we don't function well. Well, it may feel great at first, but later, when you sow to the wind, you reap the whirlwind. Okay, so in this article now, I think this is an example of a secular, even though we're talking about Christian religion here, this is a secular piece. And what I mean is that this piece reflects secular ideas and a secular ideology, even though the principal individual who is being interviewed here is a Christian pastor. What is communicated is a secular understanding of the world. So I'm going to read portions of this article. I'm going to make a couple of comments. And the article, actually, I think was an interview online or something, and it was reduced to the article. So we have Megley and Chulak, and Megley is the author, and Dawn Megley and Chulak, looking for his first name here, is the person being interviewed. Megley, talk to me about how you came to a personal faith and how you developed not just a deep personal relationship with God, but decided to dedicate your professional life to it. Chulak. Well, it's really interesting because a lot of this really intersects with my sexuality. I'm just pausing there because the concept here, we're talking about a pastor who's following Christ, allegedly, being a Christian pastor, and what he's doing, he said, it has to do with my sexuality. Now, this would not give hardly any reader pause, but I pause because when you think about it, how does it make sense to talk about a religious vocation as having to do with your sexuality? 50 years ago, that would never have occurred to anyone to say that. Not only that, it would have been considered completely inappropriate. Even if there wasn't any question about the moral quality of the sexuality in question, no one would have said, well, you know, I've been a heterosexual for a long time, and I really have a high libido. I love sex, and I love sex with my wife. And so that figured into me becoming a pastor in the Christian church. Doesn't that sound weird? What would one have to do with the other? Oh, but times have changed. Okay, so that explains why I paused where I paused. So I'll begin again with Chulak's comment. It's really interesting because a lot of this really intersects with my sexuality. I ended up, when I was in high school, coming out to some close mentors of mine in the church. And they were really accepting of me and really loving and really supported me in a time that was really confusing, where I was trying to make sense of all this going on in my life. Now, I want to pause there for a moment. and confess that this paragraph that I just read actually, again, I'm not sure the right words to use here, but actually instructed me in a way I needed to be instructed. Here is a young person in a religious environment who's experiencing same-sex attraction, and this is a point of conflict for him. And it is difficult to manage. And I'll just say right out, I think that in general, sometimes we as Christians are not as sympathetic to that struggle as we could be. And I'm not as sympathetic to that struggle as I could be when people encounter that, all right? Yet in the midst of this struggle, this Chulak was influenced by people who were really loving, but notice how he actually puts it, were really accepting of me and really loving and really supported me during the confusing time. That is, what they did is they affirmed his desires. And that affirming those desires was considered loving because he was being accepted. Now, I think that there's certainly a legitimacy to accepting in a loving way someone with same-sex desires and affirming them as a human being without at the same time saying, yes, I get it, and those things are okay, and that's fine with me, and I have no trouble with you feeling that and acting those things out. Those are different things, but they have become conflated. I think we ought to be really loving. We ought to be really supportive, really accepting of individuals in their struggle, but that doesn't mean we become affirming of the behavior. But in this day and age, that is exactly what that means, affirming of the behavior. It's just woven right into that paragraph. So on the one hand, we see the struggle, and we ought to be more sympathetic than I think we have been, or even I have been, to people in this kind of struggle. Yet at the same time, that doesn't mean giving up the ghost, and here I mean the Holy Ghost. Yes, like, okay, we're going to affirm that. I mean, there are people that are struggling with adulterous temptations, and it's terrible for them because whatever situation they got themselves into, they are deeply, passionately in love with somebody they're not married to. And maybe they haven't given in to it or even mentioned it, but for whatever reason, this is what they're fighting with. Are we to say, okay, I want to be supportive, loving, accepting, and affirming of the desire and your pursuit of it? Do you see the difference there? He mentions here, I was really vulnerable and I was really scared. And that we ought to be sympathetic to that. But that ought not change our moral common sense about these behaviors. But in any event, all right, went on to Bible college in our broader community where I live, he says, and he wanted to be able to help other people. Okay, then Megley, the author, asks, one of the most high-profile battles of America's culture war is faith versus sexuality. Talk to me about your faith and how it intersects with your sexuality. Okay, that is a very important question. And the reason it's an important question is the battle is because of the point I made right at the beginning. In what sense does, like, being a pastor have anything to do with one's sexuality? Well, it does when the sexuality is an unbiblical expression of sexuality. And then there it does seem to be a conflict between how can you be a man of God and a man of the cloth when you're pursuing behaviors that are inconsistent with that. And that's the controversy. Here's what Chulak says. I guess, like, the way that I've seen that work in my own life is as I became more accepting of myself and accepting of my sexuality, it really grew my relationship with God. The two are really connected. And as I was figuring out my sexuality and trying to figure out how that worked as a Christian person, notice the implication is there must be a way that this works for me as a Christian. I had to put a lot of trust into God because that was something that was really, really difficult to deal with, and I needed someone to rely on. Now, of course, that said, nothing amiss there in a sense. What I mean is, if a person is struggling with their sexuality and trying to figure out, well, let me just lay aside homosexuality for a moment. Let's just talk about heterosexuality. I was a Christian. I didn't get married till I was 48 years old. I had my 48th birthday on my honeymoon. All right, and I became a Christian when I was 23 years old. So I had 25 years of celibacy. In other words, I did not have sex with other women. Now, it took me about a year or so to kind of get that all under control. All right. And so there was a period of struggle. But the nature of my struggle was what I'm desiring and wanting to have is not what God wants for me. And I need God's help. And in my struggle with that, it would be fair to say that that helped my relationship with God. And I need to turn to him, help me to deal with the things I wanted to do that I shouldn't do. So there's a sense in all of the things that Chulak has said here that would apply to my own life, except for I went in a different direction. I didn't use those statements as a way of verifying and justifying and validating the sinful desires and justifying pursuing them, but quite the opposite. He continues, so for me, as I started to trust God more, and as I learned, I leaned into God more, I began to realize that God accepted me as I was. Now, again, this is, shall we say, a half-truth. Or let me say it's a whole-truth that can be misapplied. God does accept us where we are. That doesn't mean he wants us to stay there. You know, just as I am, the hymn states, we come as we are. And I make that point even in the story of reality. God first catches his fish, then he cleans them, but he does clean them. He doesn't leave them dirty, and he doesn't leave us in our behaviors that are wrong. One of my favorite, and then Megley responds here, it says, one of my favorite tenets of the Christian faith is that all people are created in the image of God. This is true. She continues, so it seems, okay, now I'm going to read this slowly because this is a bit surprising the application she makes to this biblical truth. So it seems that as you're exploring your own identity, you would, in a way, in fact, be exploring a reflection of God and exploring the sanctity of your own identity. And Chulak says, yes, definitely. In other words, they're identifying his sexual appetites with the image of God in man, and therefore a gift from God, and he's experiencing more of the image of God in himself by pursuing his same-sex attraction, sexual appetites. That's what's going on here. Yeah, definitely. And Megley says, what do you think the church could do to be more welcoming and supportive of youth, especially LGBTQ youth? And he goes on, he talks about that a little bit. And then Megley, towards the end of the article, says something like, you must be a really powerful example for some of these kids who may be struggling or who may be questioning that, hey, you can be gay and you can love God and there is a place in this community for you. And Chulak says, yeah, I definitely see that. So what he wants to be is kind of a bridge and an encouragement like those mentors were for him as he came out to others who want to come out and be Christian and be gay and celebrate that as part of the image of God in them. Okay, now there's something in this conversation, and there's a little bit more, but I've covered what I wanted to cover for the most part. There's something in this piece here that stood out for me by way of absence, and something was missing. And the thing that was missing in this entire conversation was any reference to the Bible. There is no reference to the Bible here. I don't think there's any reference to Jesus, now that I think about it. There was just reference to feeling close to God as he accepted himself more as a gay person, and therefore he could celebrate his gayness before God as a Christian. But wait a minute, if you're a Christian, doesn't that mean the Bible has some kind of role in your life in terms of instruction and direction, helping you understand what is good and right and true? There is no reference here whatsoever. Now, sometimes there's going to be an attempt to say, well, the Bible's not against this because people have misread these verses and the so-called clobber verses that are used against us have been misunderstood and here's the proper way to interpret. There's nothing like that. There's not even an attempt to bring Scripture into this in a meaningful fashion. It's almost as if it makes no difference. And this goes back to what I was talking about right as I launched out. Christian view of reality. How do we know what the world is supposed to be like? What humans were made for? How something as powerful as sex is to be properly used? We know this because God tells us. And I wrote a piece a couple of years ago that I also give a talk on now, the title of it is Faithfulness is Not Theologically Complicated, when it comes to issues like this, for example, human sexuality. This is not complicated in Scripture. Scripture has a lot to say about it, and it doesn't say anything that affirms what we just read in this piece from this Christian pastor. And maybe that's why it wasn't mentioned. Isn't the Bible the blueprint? Isn't it the guide? Isn't it the account of God's purposes? Isn't it the expression of God's heart? But if we don't take it as that, then what do we take? Well, we take what we feel. Once I embraced my sexuality as a gay person, I felt closer to God. What if we change that? What if we say, once I embraced my passions for my neighbor's wife and thus embraced her, that finally the struggle was over and I felt at peace with God. How is that different? How is that different? Somebody might say, well, in that case, you're hurting somebody else. You're hurting that relationship. But this is not the point. I'm not saying either is wrong because they're hurting someone else or not. I'm saying they're wrong because that is not God's purpose. We're substituting a false criteria when we say, well, is that hurting somebody? My answer is yes. The adultery is hurting, and the adultery hurts many, including those committing it, and homosexuality, and heterosexual illicit sex. All of that hurts the people who do it. Sin destroys. You read James chapter 1. It's destructive. Anyway, thought I'd pass that on. Church youth leader talks about coming out and finding God. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. Coming up next, your calls.
Would you like a Stand to Reason speaker to speak at your church or event? Greg, Alan, Tim, and our newest apologist, John Noyes, are available, both in person and online. Just email booking@str.org to schedule them today. Our speakers can address a wide array of topics, from bioethics, gender issues and science, to theology, philosophy, and how to respond to other worldviews, all from a biblical perspective. Whether it's a Sunday sermon, Zoom conference, or YouTube live event, our skilled and engaging speakers can be there, either physically or virtually, with the goal of equipping Christians to effectively influence the culture for Christ. To read their bios and learn more about the topics they cover, visit str.org. Then email booking@str.org to schedule Greg, Alan, Tim, or John today.
Have you ever wondered how Stand to Reason is able to produce fresh, accessible content each week? We rely on generous donors so that we can provide you with the tools and tactics you need to be an effective ambassador for Christ. If you've benefited from this podcast or any of our donor-provided resources, including our apps, blog posts, articles, and short videos, consider making a financial contribution to Stand to Reason today. Just visit str.org/donate to show your financial support. It has been an honor providing you with a host of free resources for more than 27 years to help you give voice to the Christian worldview. Help us continue by making a financial gift today at str.org/donate.
All right, Greg Kokel here. Stand to Reason's the show. I am your host, and my first caller is the ever-patient... Oh, wait a minute. Which button do I push? This one. The ever-patient Ryan in Cincinnati, Ohio. Ryan, thank you for your waiting for so long, buddy.
Thank you.
How you doing?
For taking my question. I'm doing well. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing better. I'm just coming off of COVID about a week or so ago, and I'm still feeling a little bit weak, you know, but I had a mild case, fortunately, because I think I had the Omicron. And if that seems to be sweeping the country and everybody's up in arms about it, I think, as far as I could tell, that's pretty good. If you got a fairly mild version of COVID that's sweeping, that means people are getting herd immunity by getting kind of a unpleasant cold type thing. You know, and that's what the Omicron is like, as many have pointed out. So anyway, I'm glad I'm, you know, I've got that in my ancient history now, and I have natural immunity, even though I have received a couple of shots in the summer. So I'm glad for that. So what's on your mind, Ryan?
Yes. So my question is in regards to some conversations I've had with a family member, and it's more so in this family member comes off a lot as agnostic.
Agnostic? Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And the whole question is, when talking to someone about the Bible or Christianity in general, how do you argue the credibility or accuracy of the topic, in this case, the Bible? And how do you argue against more of an agnostic approach?
Okay, so there are two things here. One has to do with the integrity of the text, I think, and the other one has to do with agnosticism. Let me just take agnosticism first because it's the least complicated. There are two types of agnosticism. That is people who don't know one way or another. That's kind of the idea. You have believers, you have unbelievers, and then you have, I don't know. Okay, and one type of agnostic is somebody who says, I don't know. Another type of agnostic says, I don't know the answer regarding this issue, say God, and no one can know. Now, that's a much stronger claim. When you say, I don't know, I'm not convinced one way or another, that's one thing. But it's another thing to say, but no one can know. This is not possible to know. All right. Now, if they tell me this is not possible to know, I want to know why they think it's not possible to know what? Some detail of spiritual truth. It's not possible to know whether God exists or not. Why is that? And I'd want them to answer that. See, I think that's a very strong claim. All right. Now, if they say, well, I don't know, but maybe some people do, they're just personally agnostic. Then it's an opportunity to find out why is it. There's a lot of click clacking going on in the background. I don't know if you're what that is, but is there any way we can?
Is that better?
Yeah, right. For now, right. Whatever's happening. So if the person says I'm agnostic, that means I don't know. Then the question is, well, what is it that's keeping you on the fence? The person is on the fence. They might go one way. It's possible that, let's say, Christianity is true or God exists, and it's possible God doesn't exist. I'm not sure. Well, what's keeping you on the fence is the question. So at least there's that kind of agnostic is at least open to the possibility that knowledge in this area is possible. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So in your case,
it's more of a soft versus a hard agnostic.
Say that again?
It's more of a soft agnostic versus a hard agnostic.
Yeah, that's the way you could put it, a soft versus hard, all right? And so I don't know the circumstance that you're facing, but if you have a hard agnostic, then the question is going to be, why is it that no one can know? And then, I don't know, maybe there's some form of empiricism they're going to offer, because God is not anything you could see with your eyes, and therefore you can only believe things that you can see with your eyes, etc., or with your five senses. And there are different ways to deal with that, but that would be one. You know, I don't know how they would answer, but that might be one way they do that. But if they answer, well, it certainly is possible, I just don't know, well, what kind of evidence would make a difference for you? What's keeping you on the fence? As opposed to saying, no, there is no God at all. That would be one position. There's something gives them pause. Wonder what that is. And so maybe that's something you could talk about. All right. So that's one issue. All right. The other issue, though, is a little more complex, and it depends on what the actual concern is. It has to do with the integrity of the biblical text. Okay. So tell me more precisely what the concern is about the text that you've encountered.
Well, part of it is dealing with essential text versus important text. And I've made the claim that essential text is anything that has to deal with salvation. And he seems to chalk that up to just interpretation. And it's just one's interpretation, and how do you really get to an objective sense there versus a more of an interpretive kind of sense.
Right. Right. Well, when you say, just to be clear, when you say, what were the two categories of texts that you offered?
More of an essential kind of topic and stuff that's essential to salvation versus stuff that's important and secondary or tertiary.
So this is actually, this distinction you're making, essential or important, though it may be completely valid. When you're discussing theological issues, like, for example, with other Christians, people might say, well, this one detail has some value, but it isn't an essential, okay? Those are somewhat, I don't want to say arbitrary distinctions, but they're distinctions that shouldn't matter to a non-Christian, all right? When your friend says whether a thing is essential or merely important, now she's entering into a theological discussion that's kind of an in-house discussion. And so I don't even know if making that distinction with her is going to be helpful. But I think there are certain details that seem to be critical, and that is the person and work of Christ. And if she's dismissive about those really critical things because it's a matter of interpretation, this is where a question is in order. When you say it's a matter of interpretation, or that's just your interpretation, what do you mean? What is it you're getting at there? Now, I know the point that is being made, but I think there's a mistake that people make when they make a statement like this, and I think that drawing them out a little bit will help them to see this mistake. So maybe we can role play this a moment, okay? So you be your friend, and I'll say something like, there are parts in Scripture that are really more vital than others, that Jesus was God, okay? The fact that Jesus was God, this is really vital, and it's not as important as other particular things. All right. And so you being the naysayer in this case, you're like your friend, what would you say to that? Something about interpretation, right?
Well, I'd say that, you claim that this is truth, but how do you really know that as such? Can you really know that?
Okay. So when you say,
I might concede on this point, but how do you know that as true?
Okay, so here's where I have a question. I'm role-playing. I'm in character here with you. When you say, how do I know it's true, I'm not sure what you're referring to. How do I know that the Bible, the text itself, claims that Jesus is God, or how do I know that he actually is God? Those are two
How
different
would you know
things.
That?
Which one?
Well, if the text says that Jesus is God, how do we really know that to be true?
How do we know what to be true? That he is God?
That he claimed to be God.
Okay, so when, let's just take an example. So here's a passage right here where Jesus is being opposed by the leadership and they want to kill him. All right? And he says, "For what good work are you killing me?" And they say, "We're not killing you for any good work, but you being a man claim to be God." All right, see there where it says that here in the text? I'd be showing it to you if we were together. All right. So would you say then, again, Ryan is in our role play here, would you say, Ryan, then, that it is fair to conclude, based on what these men said, that Jesus' claims were claims to divinity?
I would concede that they're claims to divinity, but how do we know that his claims are evidentially backed up?
Okay, that's good. Now we've made the first step. Now there's no confusion about what the claim actually is, all right? Now the question is whether he's right, all right? And so there's a number of ways I could maybe pursue this, and one of them is, I'll just take a very simple way. What if... Ryan, the skeptic here in our role play, what if, Ryan, this person who claimed to be God was actually executed and then raised himself from the dead 3 days later? Would that, if it happened, give credibility to the claim?
Yes, it would.
Okay, good. So now this is more progress. Now the issue then is, do we have good reason that Jesus rose from the dead? That's the next step.
I don't know, do we?
Okay, so this is the next step. Okay, so if I could show you good reason to be convinced that Jesus actually rose from the dead, and maybe you haven't been exposed to any reasons before, but that's okay. But if I were to give you good reasons, then that would be one way. It sounds like you're agreeing with me. That would be one way of demonstrating that Jesus claimed to be God was actually true. Fair enough?
Yes.
Okay, so now we're down to the question of the resurrection. So I'm done with the role play, but notice how I stepped through that in a couple of careful steps to lay a foundation that is completely reasonable. Mm-hmm. So one could say, "Oh, that's just your interpretation." Well, wait a minute. This is what it says. It says, "You being a man, make yourself out to be God." Well, how else are you going to interpret that? Oh, yeah, I guess they did think he was God. I guess they did think that he was claiming to be God. Okay, good. Now we both agree on that. Now we got that. Now, what if he rose from the dead? Would that confirm the claim? Well, if he did, then it would. Okay, great. Let's see if he rose from the dead. Do we have any good evidence that he rose from the dead? And so this would be the next step, making the case for the resurrection. But notice how what I've done here, Ryan, and this is really important in terms of the process, is I had to get really crystal clear on the nature of the claim, and keep refining it to get to the very specific thing that gives me one specific thing to deal with, not a big kind of ambiguous thing to deal with. Oh, how do you know what's true? How can you trust the Bible? And it's all very general. Okay, well, let's start with something specific. What is it? Oh, the deity of Christ, because maybe I brought that up. Deity of Christ is really important. Okay, yeah, well, how can I believe that? Okay, believe that he claimed it or believe that he proved it? Well, let's show that he claimed it. Here's the text. What do you think? Oh, well, that looks pretty clear that he claimed it. Okay, great. Now, how did he prove it? What about this? And we just take it piece by piece by piece instead of letting these general challenges kind of fog the matter a little bit. Does that make sense to you, the way I pursued that?
Yes, it does.
Do you think that would be helpful if you were the person that you have in mind? You mentioned a female, I think. Does that person seem to be open to discussing some of these things?
They might be. However, when asked, they've kind of asked, "Well, what do you believe?" And I've kind of sent back the same question, and they'll be like, "Oh, I don't want to talk about it," or et cetera. And they kind of come across as if they're not really wanting to get very personal with the conversation. But talking in a general sense is something they seem to be open to.
They're open to talking in a general sense, but not in a specific sense? Is that it?
Not in a more personal sense, like, what do you believe, more so.
Okay, so are they asking you what you believe, or are you asking them what they believe?
Well, both.
Okay. All right. Well, I think it sounded to me like you'd already weighed in with your own convictions, and then they raised an objection against it. How do you know? How can you trust the Bible translations or your interpretation? It's just a matter of interpretation or something like that. So, not sure if I completely addressed the issue.
That'd be correct.
Sorry?
That would be correct.
Oh, that I haven't completely addressed it. Is that what you mean?
No. What you said right before that would be correct.
Okay. So sometimes these things just take time. You take a little bitty steps at a time with people, and the goal in those little bitty steps is to help them to see that your convictions about these things are reasonable. They have foundation in facts or evidence. Some people toss out objections or challenges, and what they're thinking in their mind is, there's no possible way that this could ever be resolved. You know, I got all these objections. Who knows? Nobody can know. And this is where the agnosticism comes in. Nobody can know. But the fact is, of course you can know. There are all kinds of things we know about ancient history, and we have every reason to believe we know them. They're well justified. There are all kinds of evidences for different things that verify things, and these same approaches can be applied to Scripture and to the claims of Jesus. But a lot of folks have never been exposed to that. It never even occurred to them that there could be an answer to this, or a reason, or a rationale, or something like that. And if you can step them through a little bit to help them to see how these things might be verified, so it's not just a big giant question mark, then maybe they might be willing to surrender some of their agnosticism. I don't know, something like that. All right.
One thing that comes to mind is a question you ask a lot is, well, how did you come to that conclusion that you can't know?
Right. Well, that's a very important question to ask of a hardcore agnostic. Why would they say that? Exactly. That's exactly right. In fact, I raised it earlier, but I just used a different version of the question, but it was amounted to the same thing. Why would you think that no one could know? You know, even going back to the cosmological argument, the universe had a beginning. Either something started it or nothing started it. It's either one or the other. Nothing caused the Big Bang, or something caused the Big Bang. There's no other alternative. What makes the most sense? It certainly isn't nothing caused the Big Bang. That is the odds-on favorite. The odds-on favorite is that something caused the Big Bang. Something outside of the material universe caused the material universe. Now, that becomes a very simple, straightforward argument for having confidence that God exists. No need for agnosticism. It's not justified. And we could be mistaken, but there's no reason for us to say there's no possible way anybody can know. Of course you could know. My daughter once slammed her hand on the table, and she said, if I bang my hand on the table, then I'm the one who banged it. So who banged the Big Bang? That's a great question. Who banged the Big Bang? And I'm only offering this example of an argument for God's existence, a cosmological argument in this case, as a way of demonstrating that radical agnosticism is not justified. To say no one can possibly know, that is a radical claim that is not justified. Why would somebody say no one could possibly know? I'd want an accounting of that, just like you mentioned. All right?
Yeah.
All right, Ryan, got to run. I got another caller coming. I'm going to do a quick break and then get to Diego in Wilmington, California. Thanks for your call, though, Ryan. And I'll be back in just a moment here on Stand to Reason. Stay with us.
Hey, friends. Would you like to be encouraged throughout your week with timely, relevant content meant to bolster your knowledge, wisdom, and character? Or maybe you have a desire to be connected with other like-minded Christians from around the world? If so, then you need to follow Stand to Reason on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Not only will you be able to interact with other Stand to Reason followers, but you'll also stay up to date and informed on our latest resources and events. In our current culture, it's important to have something of value to break up your social media feed. So just visit str.org and find the links to all of our social media platforms at the bottom of the homepage.
Have you seen our brand new website? Stop by str.org and enjoy a fresh, clean layout with all the same great content. The new Stand to Reason website was designed with you in mind. It has an easier than ever navigation and a crisp, simple layout so you can find all the sound analysis and careful commentary that you've come to expect from us. Browse new features that make finding your favorite resources easier than ever. As always, it's our goal to equip you, our fellow Christians, with the confidence, clear thinking, and courage you need for every encounter you have as a Christian ambassador. Our new website is just one way we're fulfilling that goal, allowing you to access the resources you need in a new and improved way. So visit str.org and keep coming back to discover new podcasts, articles, and videos each and every day.
All right, final segment here on Stand to Reason. And Diego in Wilmington, California has been waiting. Diego, welcome to the show.
Hi, hello.
Hi.
How are you doing, Greg?
I'm doing fine. In fact, I used to live close by where you're at. I was in Carson for many years, which is right next door.
Oh, great.
This is where, that's the part of town where gas prices make no sense. That is, you see them pumping it, you see them refining it, and you see them selling it. It's all right there. You can stand in one spot and look at the pump, the refinery, and the gas station, and wonder why you're paying $5 a gallon.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, so anyway, so what's on your mind, Diego?
I wanted to ask about, I started getting more involved in apologetics. I've been reading the assembly where I attend, the church.
Uh-huh.
We have our own. They have like their own little like theological institute.
And
institute.
Oh yeah, good.
Yeah, and I got involved in it and I finished it, and that's where I kind of learned a little bit more of on apologetics.
Uh-huh.
They didn't have a big part of it, but that's where I learned what apologetic was.
Oh, well, great.
And at that time, I wasn't going to school. I had taken some time off. But now that point is, I stepped away from school because I did not know what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
But once I found apologetics, I always been drawn to theology from a start, but I didn't know where I could, you know, get involved in. So now I kind of, I have more of an idea of what is it that I want. And as in now I'm enrolled back to school and I'm majoring in philosophy, but my plan is to, major in philosophy and then get into a Christian university and study theology and then, you know, apologetics. So I want to know, what do you recommend? Like, what pathway can I take to get me where I want to go? Or, like, how can I arm myself better so I can know more and help the youth at my church?
Yeah.
While I get there, you know?
Yeah. Oh, well, good for you. And I think that you've said a lot here so far. You had an institute that you're part of there at your local church. You have done some study, but then you pulled back because you weren't sure exactly the direction you're going. And now you have a clearer idea because you've discovered apologetics, and you found that that can be really helpful, and that might help the youth in your church. Am I getting you right there?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so I just an aside on this. A lot of times... You know, somebody may not, they may go to school to learn how to cook, all right, not because they want to become a professional cook, but because they want to eat well.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you don't have a professional goal or a precise ministry goal down the line, you still could be studying theology or apologetics for mm-hmm. the benefit that you get from it. Now, when I got my master's degree in apologetics, I started going to school not because I, you know, had ambitions of being a full-time apologist. I just knew I wanted to learn more. And this was an opportunity, and so I took the opportunity and started studying. And frankly, I wasn't even thinking about graduating until a few years later I got a note and said, you're graduating. Oh, really? I wasn't even shooting for that. I was just keep taking more and more courses, and pretty soon I was done. And that's when I made a more concerted decision to go into philosophy to help my apologetics, because now I was doing radio, and now I wanted to go more into that. Now, here's the advice that I give most people. I encourage you to follow, for one, your interests. And there's a little noise in the background. I don't know, is that feedback? Do you have kids?
Yeah, sorry.
Do you have kids there or what?
No.
Okay. But I started studying apologetics because I liked apologetics. That was it. And I think that's a good way to start with theology or apologetics or anything. You pursue the thing you're interested in. Now, as you're pursuing that, you're looking for an opportunity to be useful wherever you're at. And the way I characterize that is you try to bloom where you're planted. All right? Mm-hmm. Bloom where you're planted. So you're there in your home community and your local church, and maybe you're taking some classes in theology, okay? Well, that gives you an opportunity to become useful in the local church, maybe teaching a Bible study to youth or doing a talk to youth about some of the things that you're learning, putting together a talk about Jesus or some theological issue that you can help them with, all right? The point I'm making here is that you are taking advantage of whatever opportunity is there in front of you at the moment. It may not be the big thing that you're looking for down the line. It may not make you any money, may not make a living for you, but I did this kind of stuff for many, many years before I ever got paid for it. And then I got paid a little bit, you know, I get an honorarium for giving a talk, but I needed to learn the ropes. I needed to have practice communicating and to give that away to the local body, to the local Christians, whatever, and then made my living in a different fashion until such a time as I could take what now I've developed into a craft and then use this in a more sophisticated way to make a living at it. Okay. And that's what the why this concept of bloom where you're planted is so important. Do what you're able to do. Last hour, I interviewed Robbie Lashua, who's the newest guy on our team, and he said, I heard you say this for years and years and years, and finally I decided I better bloom where I'm planted. And so I just started there at my local church. I started working with the youth and teaching some of the apologetics that I was beginning to learn. You don't need to have a degree to teach what you're learning. Just teach whatever it is you're learning. And the and teaching it to other people and explaining it to other people will help you learn more effectively. It'll fix it more in your own mind. If you teach others, you're going to learn it better yourself. Okay, so that's one secret. So the first principle: bloom where you're planted. Do what you can with what you have. Second principle is to be a student of your craft. Okay. To be a student of your craft. And you're already doing that too, as far as I could tell, Diego, at least in some measure. So your craft is theology and apologetics and communicating it. So the craft entails a knowledge element and it entails a skill of communicating, whether it is verbally or whether it's in writing or maybe in front of an audience or in front of a YouTube or whatever, you know, there's a those are two elements there that you can think about developing. How can I be better at my craft? Taking courses, reading books, this helps build your knowledge base, okay? Learning how to communicate more effectively, that builds your general craft as a communicator. Okay. And there are different ways to pursue each of those things. But in general, I'm just giving you a broad characterization. And I have been given the same advice for years and years and years because I think it's good advice. It's the same advice that I followed in my own life. All right. I took the opportunities that were in front of me or I made opportunities in front of me, and I tried to be useful where I was at. I wasn't waiting until I could get somewhere else to be useful. I was trying to be useful where I'm at. So I would encourage you to be praying about that. What are the opportunities right here in front of me, in my local community, with my friends, with my youth group, with my local church, whatever? Ask God to help you to make use of the opportunities you have, okay? And then as you're doing that, you want to get better at what you do. And that's the whole point of being a student of your craft. Try to learn more. And you like apologetics and you like theology, so that's going to be a fun part anyway. I know.
Yeah.
So
I forgot how is it that I got into it, but I didn't really know what it was, you know.
Right.
Till I forgot. I think I ran into William Craig Lane.
William Lane Craig. Yeah. William Lane Craig.
Yeah, I just went down a rabbit hole. I just went down the rabbit hole, and then, you know, I started finding a lot of people like you and Mike Winger, Alyssa Chowlers. It's funny because I found your book on the thrift store the other day, something about reality.
Yeah, The Story of Reality.
Yeah, I found it on the thrift store. It's funny.
Wow. Okay. Well, good. All of the people you mentioned, Bill Craig and Alyssa Childers and Mike Winger and the Stand to Reason crowd, we are all here to help you develop your craft, to get better at your knowledge, okay? And as you do that, and then you learn something new, I always try to find somebody to talk to about it, okay? And then when I talk to them about it, then, you know, I learned it better myself. So anyway, there it is. Bloom where you're planted. Be a student of your craft. Hope that helps, Diego. It's just in Wilmington. It's sweet talking to you, and maybe we'll chat again. Thank you for your call. Greg Kokel here. Stand to Reason. That's it for this show. Give them heaven, friends. Bye-bye now.